This is Movies for the Blind, episode 76, Beggars in Ermine, part 2.
Have you got the nerve to go through with it?
Then I have.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with Beggars in Ermine, starring a man who seldom got to play a hero. Lionel Atwill was best known for playing the mad sculptor in Mystery of the Wax Museum and Olivia de Havilland's nasty uncle in Captain Blood, and he even got a crack at playing the evil Professor Moriarty in a Sherlock Holmes movie. Things took a very bad turn for him, though, in 1940, when it was discovered by authorities that he'd thrown a wild party considered to be an orgy, and in a trial which resulted from some of what happened there, he refused to reveal the identities of his party guests and was convicted of perjury. His career was never the same after that. In this film, his character has lost much more than his career. Steel tycoon John Flint Dawson lost his company, his wife, his daughter, and his legs, all due to the scheming of his former underling, Jim Marley. While in the hospital, though, Flint met up with a blind man, Marchant, who introduced him to a vast network of beggars or peddlers, men of various disabilities able to earn a fair living on the fringes of society. Over 15 years, Flint has used his business acumen to help these men become a strong organization, while Marley has used Flint's old plans to develop the steel mill. And his nephew, Lee, has joined the company as he prepares to marry a woman named Joyce, who happens to be Flint's long-lost daughter. Where we left off, Joyce learned her lawyer, Scott, is about to meet her mysterious benefactor named John Daniels. So let's find out how all these worlds collide in the conclusion of Beggars in Ermine. That night, outside a wall surrounding a mansion, a taxicab pulls up on the street. Scott gets out. And as the cab drives off, the man with one arm approaches from inside a gate. Unlocking it, he opens it for Scott, who soon meets Marchant in the mansion.
My name is Marchant. Mr. Taggart, how do you do? Mr. Daniel is waiting to see you.
Wearing a three-piece suit, Marchant goes to a door and opens it into the next room.
Mr. Taggart is here, John.
Scott takes off his hat as he steps past Marchant into the room.
Mr. Dawson.
Marchant leaves.
Come in, Scott. Glad to see you. Lots of things to talk about.
Scott approaches the desk Flint sits behind.
How are you?
And shakes his hand.
How do you do? I read in the papers you were killed in a railroad accident 15 years ago.
Oh, I had some baggage on that train. The incident served a purpose. Helped to conceal my identity. Sit down.
Thank you.
Scott sits with his hat and briefcase.
The last time I talked to you was the time I advised you to take up the study of law.
The time you made it possible for me to study law.
Well, I figured that an honest office boy would make an honest lawyer. You proved I was right. Also, I liked your lack of inquisitiveness.
Haven't been from a lack of curiosity.
A strange story, Scott. Possibly you remember a man named Jim Marley.
Yes. Yes, he was secretary and treasurer of the old Dawson Company at the time of your accident.
It wasn't an accident.
A clock reads 7:30.
On the day I learned what Marley had done, I insisted upon being moved to the hospital room down for the destitute. There I came to know a blind man named Martha.
Hours later.
Amazing story I've ever heard.
Well, through fortunate investments, we've almost doubled their savings for them.
Financially, this must be one of the strongest fraternal organizations in the world.
It is.
He lights a pipe.
You haven't mentioned your daughter. Do you mind telling me how you found her?
Marchant and I found Joyce in England just 12 years ago.
Setting down the pipe, he opens a drawer and takes out a pistol. He lays it on the desk, then takes a letter from an envelope and unfolds it.
We also found Joyce's mother on the morning of that day.
Reading the letter, he remembers when he read it on a street beside Marchand.
According to this letter from Gypsy Jones, this is the street. We turn at this corner.
Was the little girl with her?
Yes, they were together.
He followed them. He gives the number of the house.
He tucks the letter in his coat.
Why don't we go there?
Well, this is not the kind of street she'd live in.
Before them stretches a poor, bustling market street. Unsettled, Flint gets a hold of his wheelchair, and Marchant helps him move it onward toward a crowd outside a building entrance.
Officers have been in and out all day.
Miss Berger found a body she did early this morning.
Suicide.
Flint gets Marchant to stop.
But how do they know? A man came up to see her last night.
Didn't anybody hear the shot?
Woke me up. Then a truck went rumbling by. And I says to Monsieur, I says...
Here they come.
As attendants carry a stretcher out of the building, Flint stares at the body on it. He closes his eyes and lowers his head. As the memory fades, Flint puts the gun and the letter back in the drawer.
That night we found Joyce in a small institution where her mother had placed her.
You haven't seen Joyce since then?
I've seen her at least twice a year. In order not to humiliate her, I've always remained in the shadows. As to Marley, I've bided my time. Now that time has come.
He pulls out an envelope.
And these are your instructions, Scott. Preliminary to the time when I shall confront Marley personally. He succeeded in placing himself at the head of Combine Steel. Then he'll depress the stock by selling it short, with the idea of buying it back at a lower figure for personal crooked profit. My idea and plan is to buy that stock quickly.
I'll go over these instructions tonight.
Use E.J. Curry and Company for your brokers. Marley tried to ruin Curry. And I want you to buy 10,000 shares outright. Give them to Joyce. So that if I'm beaten, she won't have to suffer. Start buying tomorrow at noon.
Scott stands with the envelope.
I'll follow your orders to the letter.
They shake hands.
Good night, Scott.
Good night, sir.
Picking up his hat and briefcase, Scott leaves. Flint puts his pipe back in his mouth and lights it again, thoughtfully. The next day, on the trading floor of the stock exchange, crowds of traders hurry around buying and selling stock.
15 and a half, 5,000 buying.
In a brokerage house, men talk and scan documents and newspapers for information, while another man with headphones tallies changes on a chalkboard. One broker is on the phone.
Marley, your old enemy E.J. Curry is buying Combine in 5,000 share lots.
Soon after, another call.
Curry's back in the market, Mr. Marley. Yes.
Another call is made.
Curry must have learned you're short on Combine Steel. He's out to get you.
Splendid. Sell for my account 5,000 shares each time the stock goes up half a point.
But you're already short 15,000 shares.
I'm going 40,000 shares short. I'll bring in the security before the market opens tomorrow morning. All right, goodbye.
Marley hangs up in his office. Lee enters.
Oh, Lee.
Yes, sir.
Call a special meeting of directors tomorrow morning. You'll only have to notify these men.
He gives him a note.
Anything wrong?
Oh, no. An old enemy of mine named Curry has apparently secured considerable backing and is trying to get stock control of Combine.
Any chance of his succeeding?
I'll have my heel on his neck within 24 hours. Oh, another matter. There are 400 stock certificates representing 40,000 shares of Combined that Wilson failed to prepare for issuance. This evening, I'll help you go through them. You'll have to sign each certificate as secretary of the corporation.
Yes, sir. I did have an appointment this evening, but I can break it.
Oh, that's all right. Be back here by 9:30. That'll be time enough.
Thank you.
Lee walks out. That night, he parks his convertible on a street, with Joyce sitting beside him.
Well, what now?
Well, now I'll tell you why we're here. Scott Taggart lives in that apartment house over there. And this afternoon he told me I must never see you again.
Well, yeah? Well, I'll talk to him about that.
Now, listen, Lee. I have an idea that has something to do with my guardian. All my life I felt a force. It sounds silly, but it's there. It's invisible, but it has a name. John Daniel.
Oh, is that your guardian's name?
Yes. And tonight I'm going to see him, and you're going with me. That's why we're here. Scotty made an appointment to see him. I found that out. And we're going to follow him.
Oh, now listen, I'm no good as a detective.
Shh, there's Scotty now.
Across the street, Scott leaves the apartment house and gets into a cab. He pulls away.
Hurry, before he gets out of sight.
Lee drives off to follow. Soon after, the cab stops outside the mansion walls. Lee pulls up not far away, and he and Joyce watch Scott being let in through the gate.
Did you see that? The man that let Scott in locked the gate.
Well, what's our next move, Miss Sherlock Holmes?
Have you got the nerve to go through with it?
Bet I have.
Well, we can't go in the front way.
Well, how about the back? I could put on a long gray beard.
Have you got one with you?
I'll grow one.
Let's go over the top.
Of what?
Of that wall and through the garden.
Oh, I can just see myself dangling by the seat of the pants from one of those spikes. Yeah, and you laughing.
I promise not to laugh if you won't look when I climb.
Hold everything. I've got an idea. Hold on.
Driving across the street, Lee takes the car partway up onto the sidewalk.
Come on. I'll go first. Catch if you fall.
He climbs up on the back of the car, which is right next to the wall, allowing him to climb on top of it easily.
Come on.
Joyce stands on the car.
Oh, no. Careful now.
As Lee holds her hands to help steady her, she climbs on top of the wall.
There you are.
They turn to the 10-foot drop on the other side. Lee takes out a handkerchief.
Well, here goes nothing.
Holding it up like a parachute, he drops down and falls hard. A guard dog barks nearby. Lee's smile fades as he turns to it and backs against the wall fearfully. The big dog approaches, but doesn't charge.
Look in the eye.
Which eye?
The dog stares at him.
Do you think he'll bite?
I'll see.
When Lee holds out his hand, the dog puts a paw in it.
Say, here's a watchdog. He's a committee of welcome. Nice.
Lee pets it.
Come on. Come on, I'll catch you. Yeah, and if I miss, he'll catch you.
You hold him. I'll get down there by myself.
She climbs down to a section of the wall with two steps coming out of it, with the bottom step the height of Lee's shoulder.
Did it help? Come on, I'll help you.
Sitting on the step, she lets Lee help her down to the ground as the dog jumps on them playfully.
Get down, get down.
Lee keeps the dog down, and they walk on through the gardens. They approach a glass door on one side of the mansion and see Flint sitting in his office. Joyce steps closer and listens.
Marley is in over his head, 40,000 shares short. By tomorrow night, I'll make a pauper of him.
He drops a notepad.
A beggar on a street corner. That's only the beginning. I have several accounts to settle. This is but one of them.
She watches him back away from his desk in his wheelchair, then turns to Lee.
He hasn't any legs. Oh, did you see the hate in his face? It frightens me.
I'm not going to do any more of this eavesdropping. I'm going in there right now.
No, you're not. I want to hear what they say.
She turns again to Flint and Scott.
What I'm doing is in no way connected with this organization. I waited all these years to be able to handle it personally. Tonight I'm resigning as head of this union.
There's one thing to consider, Mr. Dawson. Not only are you going to crush James Marley,
but others who are connected with him. They're all of the same stripe. I didn't mind Marley's nephew, Lee Marley.
Your daughter Joyce is in love with him.
What?
Outside, Joyce's mouth drops open and she turns to Lee again.
Lee! That man's my father. Listen, promise me something.
Anything, dear.
Promise you won't say anything to your uncle till after I've had a chance to talk to Scott. I'll see him the first thing in the morning. I've had a chance to think things out.
Sadly, she walks away from the mansion with Lee. Inside.
You'll see how that sassam inn now lives.
Flint wheels himself to a set of doors. He motions for Scott to open them, which he does, and helps Flint wheel into a large club room where Marchant and other members of the Beggars' Union relax and chat.
Who are these men?
Well, some have retired, but all either are or have been beggars.
A waiter serves the men, who all wear suits or tuxedos. Some have missing limbs, some have crutches, others wheelchairs, others with dark glasses like Marchant.
Marchant.
With his cane, he steps up beside Flint.
This is Scott Taggart.
I met Mr. Tiger when he came last night. We welcome you, the first outsider to enter this room.
I have an announcement to make. I want you and Taggart by my side on the platform.
Marchant nods. And they both escort Flint across the room. Those men who can stand do as Flint approaches a ramp and wheels up a couple steps to the platform. The men gather in front of it, and Flint turns around to face them.
My friends, 15 years ago, I spoke to some of you on street corners and in the rooming houses of different cities. All that we planned at that time has come to pass.
The men nod.
3 years ago, against some opposition, your finance committee wisely invested all funds in government and state on which you can draw to the full amount of your savings and profits. My own fortune has come through you, and what is left at my death will be returned as an endowment to this institution. I have fulfilled my part of the bargain, but now it has come necessary for me to devote my time to personal matters. Tonight, I am resigning as head of this organization.
We won't let you resign.
Don't lock ours but, now, John.
But you can't do that, John. No.
I wouldn't leave you if there was not a man to take my place. He has been with me from the beginning, and I know no man of greater foresight. I suggest as my successor, not the blind Marchant, but Marchant, the man of superhuman vision.
But we need both you and Marchant.
We need you very much, John.
Flint pulls Marchant down to him.
Say a word to the Marchant.
I can't make a speech, but I can play something lively.
That's right. Anything.
Marchant steps away to get his accordion.
Get a play, boys.
Awkwardly, Flint leads the applause as Marchant returns, playing. Marchant smiles through the sadness incurred by his friend's announcement. The men begin to smile as well and clap encouragingly. But Marchant becomes overwhelmed.
Come on, more.
He rallies and plays on. Flint has a word with Scott, who backs up his wheelchair and helps him leave the platform. Later, a large vault is opened. Marley opens the inner gate and goes through some drawers. With a bundle of documents under one arm, he closes the gate. Then closes the vault door and turns the lock. Leafing through the documents, he walks away as a man watches through a window. He walks away. Next day, a group of workers outside the mill's front gate meet with Joe.
Wilson, what are we going to do?
I advise you to appoint a committee to see James Marley.
Next on the committee. Let's all go in and see him.
I don't believe I do that. All you want to know is that your stock is safe. It has been taken from the company's vaults. But perhaps Marley has transferred it for some good reason.
On the phone in Marley's office.
Now get this straight. I left those stock certificates at your office merely as collateral security. There won't be any necessity for selling a single share. Before noon, there'll be a break in the market. Yes, yes, the directors are meeting now.
In the boardroom.
Well, gentlemen, unless a miracle happens, Combine will be up several more points at the opening.
That's what they said, eh?
That's what my broker said.
Uh-huh.
Some of the directors hurry to the ticker tape machine as it reports the start of trading. It reads, Combined Steel, 1,000.63 and 1/4. Marley enters.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Combined open 4 points up from yesterday's closing.
Well, that about wipes me out.
I can't hold out much longer.
We're all in the same boat. We're licked.
Curry and his crowd have outsmarted you.
They sit.
Well, what are we going to do?
What do you suggest?
Cover as quickly as we can.
You turn tail, I see you take plenty of medicine.
But, Jim, we can't hold out much longer.
You can hold out for a couple of hours, can't you?
Then what?
Combined will then break 5, 10, possibly 15 points. Curry and his crowd will run to cover.
How are you going to break the market?
There's a quorum of directors present. Several have failed to show up. We can proceed without them. Everything will be regular on the minutes.
And after that?
For the first time since Combined Steel was organized 16 years ago, it has become necessary to pass the quarterly dividend.
Oh!
Fine.
I have to hand it to you, Jim.
You certainly have outsmarted Curry.
You certainly have.
Gentlemen, let's get busy.
Later, the ticker tape reports Combined Steel omits quarterly dividend. On the exchange floor, trading becomes more frenzied. The trades are tallied at the brokerage house, with Combined going from 62 to 59. Later, the ticker tape reads, Combined Steel, 6.58 and 3/4, then 3.58. In Flint's office...
All right, goodbye.
Scott hangs up the phone.
Combined has dropped 2 more points, selling at 57 and an eighth.
As Flint considers this, Marchand stands behind him and puts a hand on his shoulder.
Well, John, as I pointed out some 15 years ago, soliciting arms is both an ancient and honorable profession.
Well, I'm glad I'm alone in this.
But you're not.
Huh?
We are together, as we've been in everything else.
What do you mean, Marshal?
For the first time in my life, I bought stock, Combined Steel, on margin.
Marshal and I are in the same position. Everything we have, Mr. Dawson, came through you.
You too, Taggart?
I bought Combined yesterday at 63.
We better both sell out quickly. Put in your orders.
We'll put in our orders to sell when you put in yours.
Well, they'll wipe you out. Marley and his crowd are selling short the stock of a corporation they themselves control. Now they've passed the quarterly dividend for no other reason but to still further depress that stock. Marley personally has gone further. Last night, he stole a large amount of stock from the company's vaults. This morning before the market opened, he put it up as security. That stock didn't belong to him. It's being purchased by the employees of the corporation.
Marley can be sent to the penitentiary for that.
I have another thought in mind. I'm going out to Marley's office. What is it, Mike?
Mike lets in Joyce.
Joyce.
I just heard what happened. Lee Marley telephoned me that his uncle's gotten the best of you. I came to tell you that I helped him. I didn't tell Scotty, but I sent the stock that you gave me to Mr. Marley this morning before I understood it all.
Oh, you mustn't worry. I'll see that you never want for anything.
But that isn't what I came here for. I'm sorry. I've been so ungrateful.
Oh. She holds him.
After all you've done for me, I'm so sorry.
No. Come now.
I don't mind being poor. I don't mind anything now.
Later, the ticker tape reads, Combined Steel, 1,000.56, 4.55 and one half, 3.55, 4.55 and one half. The trading on the exchange floor gets even more intense. In Flint's office, Scott answers the phone.
Hello? What? Are you sure?
He turns to the others.
A miracle has happened. Combined is going up. Orders are coming in from all parts of the United States.
What does this mean, Marchand?
Haven't any idea.
Have you been using the funds of the organization to help me in a personal fight?
Why, no, John, certainly not.
What did you do after I left the club room last night?
I telegraphed the local headquarters in every city that you had resigned.
Yes? And what else did you say?
Marchand grins.
That you were going to be the head of Combined Steel Corporation.
What? You old fox! You old scoundrel!
In a park.
Hey, we've got to get down to headquarters.
What doing?
John Daniels has been made head of Combined Steel. Everybody's buying it.
Come on.
In Pittsburgh.
Actually, we know about it.
Here, kid, let me see that paper.
He sells it to a peg-legged man.
Keep the change, I'll be rich before the day is over.
Thanks.
Outside the Cattlemen's Bank and Trust Company.
Hey, Joe, come here.
A peddler approaches two men in a cab.
What's the trouble? Come on down to headquarters.
John Daniel's been made head of Combined Steel. Chance to clean up if we buy the stock quick.
George?
On the phone in Atlanta.
Sad Sam. Yes. Yeah, I just heard. Buy me 1,000 shares at the market.
At a rooming house.
Get up, all of you! John Daniels has resigned. He's head of a steel company. Get down to headquarters. Everybody's buying stock.
Here, I gotta go buy a home.
Reading the ticker tape in the boardroom.
It's incredible. We cut all quarterly dividends, and people all over the country flood the brokerage houses with buying orders.
In the union clubroom.
Oh, boy! You hit that one again!
The men celebrate their ticker tapes reports. While back in the combined boardroom, Marley and the directors gravely return to their seats. Lee enters and closes the door. He steps up to Marley.
What do you want?
There's a committee of workmen waiting downstairs.
I haven't time for any workmen.
But it's about some stock being held for them by the corporation.
Huh? Oh. Yes, I'd have to see about that.
As he stands, the doors to his office open, revealing Flint. Marley stares at the man in the wheelchair. Staring back hard, Flint wheels himself inside.
Flint Dawson.
Dawson?
Dawson?
Dawson? Sit down, Marley.
When Marley is too stunned to do so, Flint wheels up to him.
You may tell the committee of workmen, your uncle has stolen the stock they were buying.
Oh, that's a lie. You can tell the committee that the stock will be issued when the workmen finish paying for it.
Mr. Wilson offered to pay the amount owing on his stock, but the head bookkeeper couldn't find the certificates in the safe.
Now, gentlemen, that's all you need to know. Except that before the market closes today, the control of Combined Steel will have changed hands. The dividends will be paid as usual. Now you may go.
The directors can do nothing but stand and comply. Meanwhile, the workers leave their stations in all parts of the mill. They gather outside. Inside.
Your nephew may stay, if you want him.
Wait outside for me.
Lee leaves Marley and Flint alone in the boardroom.
Sit down.
With all of his smugness sapped from him, Marley finally sits. Flint reaches into his jacket pocket, considers, and sets the gun on top of the intercom. Marley gapes at it, then sits back.
Did you ever see that revolver before?
Why, no.
You bought it in Liverpool 3 days before Vivian was killed. It was found on the floor beside her.
I sailed 2 days before she killed herself.
You sailed several days after her death.
But the records of the steamship company...
The records of the company show that you booked passage. But the purser's report shows you did not sail on that boat. You killed her.
I didn't. I didn't kill her. She took her own life. I had no idea. John, I swear...
That's what we're going to find out.
Outside, the workers assemble under the balcony of the boardroom, and Flint hears them through open French doors.
If I turned you over to them, you'd be buried with a lot of metal into which they would throw you. Perhaps you'd rather die that way, the way you tried to kill me. Or I'll see that you leave here safely and go to England to be tried for murder.
Flint checks his pocket watch.
I'll give you 5 minutes to think things over. The point is, Marley, that you have nothing to fear from a trial if you didn't kill Vivian.
Flint turns his wheelchair away from Marley, who watches him leave the boardroom and go into Marley's office, where a man closes the boardroom doors. as Flint checks his pocket watch again. Marley checks his in the boardroom. Flint sets his watch on Marley's desk. Lee enters. He crosses the office to the boardroom doors.
You can't go in there, buddy.
He turns to Flint.
Is my uncle still in there?
Flint nods.
If the stock we issued to the workman was stolen, I'm as guilty as he. I signed the certificates.
Your crime is one of ignorance. To have learned the steel business, young man, you should have started at the bottom, not at the top.
Looking toward another set of French doors to a balcony, Lee approaches them. Flint looks on with a nod of approval and returns his attention to the watch. Below, Lee meets with the workers.
Man, listen! What's ever happened to your sock? It's my fault. And I'm going to see that you don't lose a dime of your money.
We don't care what you got to say. We want Jim Marley.
Yeah, we want to see Marley.
Go away!
In Marley's office, Flint listens and continues watching the minutes pass. Joyce makes her way past Joe and through the workers to Lee.
Darling, what are you doing here?
What's happening?
Oh, it's all right here. Don't worry.
Meanwhile, Flint looks at the watch show that 5 minutes have passed. He picks it up and puts it back in his waistcoat. He turns the wheelchair to the boardroom doors, then approaches them. As the man reaches for the doorknob, he exchanges nods with Flint and does not open the doors. Flint backs away and turns toward the balcony. He wheels himself to the French doors, then pushes them open and goes out onto the balcony, smiling down on the workers. You notice him.
It's Flint! Flint Dawson has come back!
It's him, all right. Old Flint Dawson himself.
Flint raises a hand for quiet.
The mill will be closed until next Monday. All former employees will then return to work. Your stock will be issued to you, paid for in full.
Joyce and Lee join the happy crowd looking up at him before they disperse. On Monday, the whistle blows, and the men get their lunch pails from the shelves. Soon, only the lunch pail in spot number one remains. Taking it, Flint smiles down at it with Lee and Joyce. He removes the card that says hands off, and Lee pushes him on.
Now you're starting right at the bottom. That's the way to learn the steel business, young man.
Here comes the chief!
With a smile and a wave, he joins the workers for lunch.
My first day and no dinner pail.
I have lunch all ready for you at our cottage. Cottage cheese and cottage pudding. Come on.
Great!
Flint unwraps a piece of pie.
Well, Steve, that's a nice piece of pie.
Steve trades a hard-boiled egg for it. The end. This version of Beggars and Ermine was described for Movies for the Blind. And that was Beggars and Ermine. A couple people in that film have been in other Movies for the Blind. Joyce was played by Betty Furness, who was in The President's Mystery. And Joe Wilson was played by George Hayes, otherwise known as Gabby Hayes, who rode alongside John Wayne in Texas Terror and Roy Rogers in Nevada City. That reminds me, we're about due for another Western soon, aren't we? And it probably will have Gabby Hayes in it, but not quite yet. Up next, we have another tale of murder and corporate intrigue, but this one has a lot more wisecracking.
Clarence Buckman was killed on his own rotten highway.
How long are the people of this state going to tolerate these corrupt conditions?
Tell me something, Cushing.
What do you pave the highways with? Tapioca?
Yeah, we had reasons to make it hard.
Under the present setup, with Cushing in full control of the commission, all the road contracts go to his clique.
Yeah, but fighting Cushing's political machine is a pretty big order, John. Just where do we begin?
Good old Johnny. Always worrying about everybody but himself.
Yeah, can you imagine me coming home with the evening paper? Meeting you at the gate of the rose-covered cottage with a gas bill in one hand and an apple pie in the other.
You know something? I used to make a swell apple pie.
To most of you, that's just a body in there. Well, to me, it's Alma Bremer. And the skunk that did it is going to burn.
Just what is your ambition? To clean up the state, get rid of Cushing, find the murderer, avoid getting yourself hung or standing there playing post office?
That's slightly honorable. Next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.